I'm very pleased to welcome back to the Catalpa Escape podcast series, episode 6, Margot O'Byrne. Welcome back, Margot.
Hello, Michael.
Well, in the last episode, our avid listeners will recall vividly, but for those who just need a little reminder, we travelled with the Catalpa crew on the high seas. We'd been catching whales. We'd called in at the Azores. Captain Anthony had to find some new crew along the way because some deserted there. Then they found their way down the African coast into the Indian Ocean and had this amazing meeting up with a ship called Ocean Beauty and their captain cousins, who amazingly shared his maps of the coastline of Western Australia with Captain Anthony. And while all this was happening, we've got Breslin and Desmond leaving San Francisco and going across the Pacific, bound for Sydney. They're on a mail steamer called the Siphrones or the Siphrones, however this Greek name should be pronounced, Margot. But what was happening here in Fremantle? That's going to be the subject today. I mean, were the Fenians aware of what was going on? Were they all incarcerated in the establishment, as it was called, the convict establishment that the convicts had built? And were they locked up inside it still, or at least some of them? Should tell our listeners that the establishment today is well known locally as Fremantle Prison. It's a World Heritage building built by the convicts with limestone from the site right here in Fremantle. It's a great tourist attraction these days. But Mario, just going back a bit, I mean, what did the Fenians, particularly the military Fenian, know about what was going on with Fenians and the rest of the world?
Okay, well, Michael, it's interesting that there was a lot of correspondence that was going. Of course, that as convicts, they could only receive one letter every 6 months and only send one letter every 6 months. So they wouldn't have survived in today's instant gratification communication world at all. But at some time in, I think, 1871, a newspaper was smuggled into the Fremantle prison, and in it was an article about a public reception that was given by Clan na Gael in New York, in which Fenians who were released from English jails, and this of course included Davoy, they gave a reception for them, and the story included the name of a man called Peter Curran. And he was an organizer of this event and gave his address. So one of the military Fenians in Fremantle then took this address and wrote a letter, first to Peter Curran and then later to Dvoy, and expressing their disappointment that they had received no pardon whatsoever in any of the amnesties that were given to people like Dvoy or to the civilian Fenians who were pardoned here in Fremantle. And they said that they were stuck, they felt like they were stuck in Fremantle and that everyone had forgotten about them.
Well, you would, wouldn't you? I mean, a bit like me recalling my days at boarding school. If you didn't get a letter from your parents or some sort of contact, you'd assume you were forgotten about and they were having a
That's
great
right.
time and you were imprisoned in this place. It'd be a terrible feeling. And then to learn that your colleague Fenians had all been given pardons.
That's correct. And so there was a sense then, and two of the Fenians in particular, Martin Hogan and James Wilson, then took it upon themselves to write. But we'll talk about them a little bit later. So just what was going on in the rest of the community? So some of the Fenians were still here, the civilian Fenians, and in particular, we had people like Hugh Francis Brophy and Joseph Noonan. They were both had both been builders in Dublin before they were arrested, and of course these skills were needed in the Swan River Colony, and so they were retained. Their condition of release was that they stay in the colony for at least 3 years, because the government and the colonial administrators felt that they couldn't, if they'd had them in prison, they needed them here to keep building.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? If you came in as a civilian Fenian, you could sort of look forward to some sort of future, whether you stayed in the colony or eventually able to leave again. But if you're a military Fenian, you were stuck here forever, weren't you?
That's correct. Well, most of them had been sentenced to life in prison. Well, they'd been sentenced to death, but it had been commuted to life in prison. So that's all that they could see. You know, the long journey stretching out in front of them of the same every day.
Part of Australian history, of course, teaches us, including here in Western Australia, that the Irish came in droves at various times from the very beginning of the colony in Sydney in 1788. But Western Australia, I went to school with people whose last names were Noonan and Brophy, and there's still plenty of people with those surnames around Fremantle and Perth these days. It's something easily forgotten, isn't it, that these people contributed to the construction of Perth itself? What sort of buildings were they involved in?
Okay, well, that company built a bridge over the Swan River. They built another bridge in Mount Lawley. They did some work on that still remains actually on the Mercy Convent in Perth, and they also worked on the Perth Town Hall. And Noonan continued. He stayed here, and that family is still here in Perth. That's from Joseph Noonan.
Amazing, isn't it? It's great stories. I mean, this is an immigrant society. The Indigenous people have been here for 60,000 years or more, but the Irish included came along the way. But were there many of them who survived? I mean, people live and die. I mean, what happened with these people?
Okay, well, one of them, we know that Patrick Keating, one of the military men, he actually died. And some of them were released. So some of them were just given a 5-year imprisonment sentence. A man called Will Foley, he was given 5 years and he was actually released, but he couldn't get money together to actually leave. Sorry. And he was then able to stay in Fremantle, and he could move in and out of the prison because he wasn't a threat, really. They saw him as an ex-convict, and so he then became important later on in the story, and we'll get to that later.
Has to be remembered, of course, that the prisoners were brought here, leaving aside the military Fenians, because West Australian capital, people with money, were running out of labour, and they believed this was going to be a good source of skilled and cheap labour. So it all tied together nicely, except the fact you had these totally disgruntled military Fenians, as well as other Fenians, who were probably pretty keen to get out of the place. But what about as convicts? I mean, what is the daily routine when you come here? You're building the prison first of all.
Okay, so yes, they would have built the prison, and some of the we had an event, a Fenians event, up in the Fremantle prison in the East Workshop, and that we know that that's one of the areas where the Fenians worked in. So it's nice to have that absolute connection with place that goes on there. But each morning they'd wake up in the prison cells, they'd have a pretty basic breakfast, and then they'd leave the prison. Sometimes in gangs and sometimes as individuals, and they'd work in both around Fremantle or in a gang going up to Perth to do some work there. And their tasks that they did then were road building, bridge building, and disposal of garbage was a big one, apparently, that they're involved in. And they were also a source of cheap labour for the community. So if you had a business here, you could apply to the establishment and get a team or a few people to come and actually work in whatever task you had for them to do. Both Hogan and Harrington both worked on the wharf. They loaded and unloaded ships, so there was a whole gang of convicts that were down there on the wharf as well.
What
And some
about,
were sent further afield.
just going to ask, I mean, we're aware, particularly from JB O'Reilly's departure, that he was down at Bunbury before he escaped. So a few of them got around out into the country.
Yes, they did. And of course, Bunbury was one place, Darden up another. And again, it was often road building. So you were clearing roads, and even down into that great, Katanning, that sort of area. They were down that way as well. But Champion Bay, of course, was another place, which is Geraldton way, was another place where they cleared bush and built roads. And there were restrictions, of course, on receiving information from others here in Fremantle.
Well, were the Brits, the colonial overlords, worried about these people? Did they think they needed to fear another uprising, for example?
Well, that's a very interesting one, Michael, because of course, when the Fenians first arrived, they were terribly worried, and there was in fact a detective Rowe, Thomas Rowe, who had been sent by the equivalent of Scotland Yard on the Hougoumont with the Fenians to deliberately keep an eye on them and to make sure that he reported back to the authorities. And so, as early as 1870, Rowe warned his superiors that these ex-soldiers would eventually try and escape or die in the effort. But the authorities decided that the military Fenians were no longer a real threat, and that O'Reilly had made the run and the last run that was possible. They kept a fairly close eye on all boats coming in and out of Bunbury and in and out of Fremantle and presumably Albany as well. And the order was given that the incarcerated men should be treated as regular penal convicts and able to carry official messages and dispatches and even be promoted to the rank of constable.
The idea of a constable, I take it, in a convict setting is someone who had some level of whatever trust by their penal rulers.
That's correct. And they would have, I mean, these men were military men. They were used to being in an army. They were used to carrying out orders and giving orders. So in the terms of the rest of the convicts that were sent out, who were, very much the criminal class from England, then these men, and also they were literate. So this meant that they would have obviously been the people who would have been in charge.
Well, you've told us about the early letters. Despite all of that, and despite Rowe thinking they might be a danger, it's clear that he was partly right because they harbour this desire to get out of the joint.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, although they were accepting and continued on, they were never happy here. And they always wanted to go. So when Wilson wrote to John Devoy in 1874, and he requested that steps be taken to bring about their escape, and he mentioned the seven Fenians, so Cranson, Durrock, Harrington, Hassett, Hogan, Keeley, and himself, Wilson, and he said that none of them had any prospect of gaining an amnesty in British eyes.
It's really fascinating, as I said last episode, the time involved here is not that long ago. It's just a bit over 100 years, really, and that's not so long. Can you tell us about these men? I mean, roughly speaking, what are their ages and what are their backgrounds?
Okay, well, Thomas Durrock was an interesting one. He was a Protestant from a farming family in County Wicklow. Now, that might surprise some people today because
A proddy,
we think of
not a Catholic.
not a Catholic. And it's much later that divide between Catholic and Protestant has signalled who was fighting for Ireland and who wasn't. But many Protestants also saw the need for a home rule in Ireland and for an independent Ireland. And Thomas Durrock was one of them. And he joined the British Army and served 14 years. Now, I found what was interesting is that he first served in South Africa and he fought a number of campaigns there and then later went to China. He was involved in the Opium Wars in China. And he'd won medals and clasps for his bravery. But he returned to Ireland in the 1860s and he joined the Fenians. He was arrested in 1865 and charged with mutinous conduct.
What had he
And
done? What had he done?
well, an informer said that he had a plan drawn up to capture the Royal Barracks in Dublin. They're now called Collins Barracks. And that he had the whole plan worked out and how many soldiers they'd need out at one side and how many out the other and so on. So This was obviously a treasonous offence. He was found guilty of the crime of mutiny and sentenced to death, which was, of course, commuted to life in prison in Fremantle.
Now, when they came out on the Hougoumont, we know that people like Flood were writing up the Wild Goose and J.B. O'Reilly and the whole business. But how were they treated, these military freedmen? Were they given, a bit of a light run?
No, they weren't, unfortunately. They were locked deep in the hold of the ship with the common criminals. So the civilian Fenians, and O'Reilly is a bit of an anomaly here because O'Reilly was a military man, but for some reason O'Reilly was allowed to be with the civilians. And we don't know why, except that he's a all I can imagine, Michael, is that O'Reilly was incredibly charming. And he managed to be able to persuade people and incredibly persuasive. So he got to be with the civilians. And of course, they were the ones who wrote The Wild Goose. And then they had concert parties at night and they had mass on the deck and various other things. But by and large, the Fenians, the military Fenians, were locked in the hold.
And in Fremantle, what happens with someone, a Protestant like Darra?
Well, he was then, when he came out here, he actually worked as a groom and a school monitor for the Protestant chaplain at the prison. And this, of course, gave him an opportunity to go out alone. And sometimes he was out 2 or 3 times a day. So he was probably one of the most mobile of them.
Well, that doesn't sound too bad. Hassett was the other one that was mentioned in dispatches, Thomas Hassett. Tell us about him.
Thomas Hassett. Now, he was born in County Cork. He was a carpenter by trade as well until he joined the 24th Foot Regiment of the British Army. So, at the age of 23, he was on duty in Dublin when he was told by his friend Will Foley, and we'll meet Will Foley again later, that he was under suspicion of being a Fenian. So, Hassett, and this gives us some idea of his character, he left his post and in full military dress, he marched to the Fenian headquarters and presented himself to John Devoy.
My goodness, what a rebellious act. He goes down as a British soldier to say, "I'm here to serve you, Devoy."
Exactly. In full military uniform with his gun.
So
So.
he gets charged, presumably, court-martialed.
But yes, he does. But he was obviously very influential because he quickly became a centre for the Fenians, so someone who organised a group. And they say that he was personally responsible for swearing in 270 men. So that's quite an extensive power of persuasion, isn't it?
Well, it's just amazing. But as you're pointing out, these people have their death sentences commuted to life in prison. But are they otherwise marked as some way? Are they in the book work as deserter and all that?
Well, it was worse than that, unfortunately. They were actually branded on their skin, on their left side,
Like a
with a,
horse.
like a horse, yes. Now, there's some dispute as to whether how that branding was done. Some people say that it was like a tattoo, and others say that it was actually burnt, like you would brand a horse or a cow.
And that was what? How did they brand them?
With it, with an with the on their skin, on their left hand side, on the upper chest, with the
And with a
D for
D
deserter.
for deserter. And I mean, it sounds inhuman. Did they carry that practice on for long, do you know?
It went on in the British Army until 1871.
Oh my goodness. So he would have been one of the last to be D'd. And what about here in Fremantle with his D on his side? What sort of work do you get involved in?
Okay, so initially he spent time in Fremantle Prison and then he was sent out on a road gang and he was working out near 2J. Now remember, this is a man that walked off in Dublin, so of course he walked off from 2J as well.
It's about an
And
hour's drive these days from Perth.
yes, but it would have been quite a number of walking hours from Perth those days. So
So he absconds.
he absconded and remained at large for 10 months within the community. So we don't know where he was, but we can only suppose that he was supported by other Irish farmers, fellow Fenians who were free, various others within the community. And he decided that he would make his way to Bunbury and follow O'Reilly's method of escape. And
Find
he'd
a
try
cheap
and
plane's fare and head off to Boston.
head off to Boston, yes. But unfortunately, he couldn't get together the money for the passage. And he was, so he resorted to stowing away. And he stowed away on a ship called the Southern Belle. Which was set to sail for Calcutta with a cargo of railway sleepers and horses.
So they get sprung, I
He gets
assume.
sprung. Yeah, so in April 1871, he was sprung by the water police. He was sentenced to 3 years of hard labour and the first 6 months spent in Fremantle Prison in chains in solitary confinement.
Oh my goodness. Well, these people have, lots of good, defiant Irish character. I mean, so he's sitting around as a military Fenian here. Is he, you think he's a happy chappy at this point?
Well, he after that period, quite extensive period in solitary confinement and imprisoned, he then by 1874 had been made into a constable.
Oh, well, as you say, a resourceful guy, he fought here and there, and he must, people like that must have been admired, like it or not, by the local authorities and their jailers. But what about Hogan, who you've mentioned a few times, Martin Hogan?
Martin Hogan. So Martin Hogan comes from County Limerick and he enlisted in the 5th Dragoon Guards, who were one of the crack units of the British Army, and was reputed to be the best and strongest swordsman in the whole of the British Army. It was said that he could cut through a steel bar hanging from the barracks room ceiling with one blow.
Goodness me. You may. It sounds impossible, but obviously it's an indication of just what his reputation was.
Yeah, and clearly these were, little challenges that were put about to from one soldier to another in the same way that they are done now, really. So, testing your strength. But he also had a great reputation for bravery as well. And he deserted together with James Wilson. So Hogan and Wilson had fought together, enlisted together, and left the British Army together. And they were arrested with Devoy and others and transported to Fremantle.
Oh my.
And Hogan stood fast against the authorities and he was reprimanded on one occasion and sentenced to solitary confinement for walking off the job. And twice his sentence, he was sent on special duties. Now, we don't really know what they are, but one was to Geraldton and then the other was to the Aboriginal prison on Rottnest Island.
Well, special duty sounded like a bit of a break to me. You had to get to Geraldton, but you went over on the boat on a sort of half hour's ferry ride to Rottnest. It's another story all in its own, the Aboriginal prison on Rottnest. So Wadjimup, as it's now known. What about Harrington? There are a few Harringtons still around Western Australia. Tell us about Michael Harrington.
So Michael Harrington came from a Macroom in County Cork. And he'd served an apprenticeship as a carpenter building boats, actually. He was a boat builder over there. And there's still actually, he carved his, Harrington's an interesting one. He carved his name in a rock there in Cork, and that name is still there today. So you can go and see it. And he enlisted in the 61st Regiment and he left for Calcutta. So this is the days of the British East India Company and the British in India. And then they had the Punjab campaign in 1848, and he fought in practically every action in that campaign, and he won medals and clasps for his bravery.
So a lot of these guys are sort of into their 40s by the time they become quite Fenian and
That's correct. They've quite solid, seasoned campaigners within the British Army, aren't they?
so does he get to be a constable like these others?
Yes, he does. Yes, he was finally appointed a constable. He again had the same misconduct going on in the prison and sentenced to solitary and so on. But in 73, he was appointed a constable, and later employed as to look after people in a quarry, to supervise them in a quarry.
Now, we mentioned Wilson before because Hogan and Wilson were mates. Tell us about James Wilson.
So James Wilson was born in 1836. He was born in Newry in County Down, which is in the north of Ireland. His real name was McNally, but he changed it at the time that he joined the British Army, and that was not uncommon for men in Ireland. Possibly they wanted to sound more British, possibly they wanted, I'm not quite sure why. So he served 7 years in the East India Company Army, and then he travelled to America, India, Syria, before returning to Ireland and enlisting in the 5th Dragoon Guards. And he deserted the British Army in anticipation of the Fenian Rising and was arrested in Dublin and sentenced like the others. Wilson and Harrington, when they were in here in Fremantle, they both worked on the Fremantle Harbour, loading timber and unloading goods. So at the time of the escape, that's where they were working.
I mean, everybody was getting ready for this big Fenian uprising. We talked about it, I think, in episode one, and the result was that the Brits clamped down hard.
They did.
Well, you mentioned,
So
sorry, go on.
it was Wilson's letter. So he had written a few letters then. Hogan wrote first, and then Wilson, and he wrote to John Devoy finally, and said, "Look, please, please get us out." It was smuggled out by the Catholic priest in the prison, and it was known as the Voice from the Tomb letter. And he said that they were here and they were in a living tomb, and that appealing to Devoy as their previous commander to please do make a plan and get them released.
Well, good old Devoy, he was hit by the voice from the tomb letter. How could you not be? You mentioned Will Foley. Again, plenty of Foleys around the West. What's his story?
So Will Foley came originally from Tipperary, and he was also a veteran of the Bombay Horse Artillery and had seen action in India. After he returned to Ireland, he was in the cavalry, the 5th Dragoon as well, and he became the orderly for the Englishman who was in charge. And John Devoy described him as one of the best and most faithful men in the British Army.
Wasn't talking about the Fenians, just talking about the British Army.
Correct. Now, I think he was talking about, within there, he was in the British Army, but he was the also working in subterfuge for the Fenians.
Yes, what he's really saying is he's an impressive military fellow.
Correct, correct.
So what
So
happens when he gets here?
he's released on a ticket of leave. His sentence was 5 years, but he couldn't find the means to get out of the colony. And I'm not entirely sure why, because the earlier people who were released, the civilians, actually there was a fund going on then that they were able to get a ticket out. But by the time that Foley was released, that wasn't possible for him. So he remained in Fremantle, but he was a free man. But as a free man, he was able to visit his companions in Fremantle jail without any suspicion.
Well, what a convenient thing. I mean, he wrote Fremantle. This prison's been built. It's there today. You can go walking through it. The military Fenians are around the place. Some of them are here, some of them are there. And at the same time as they're here, Breslin and Desmond are on their way and arriving in Australia. Did they get here? We know that. When did they get him? And what did
They got here.
they
Yes. So the plot thickens, Michael.
do?
So on the 15th of October in 1875, so we're almost 150 years to the month, the Sifrenes arrived in Sydney with the first class passenger, Mr. Collins, who we know as Breslin, and the below deck passenger, Mr. Thomas, sorry, who we know as Tom Desmond. And their journey from California had taken 2 months. At that time, Sydney was experiencing a growth in prosperity. Gold was petering out in the colony of New South Wales, So there was an influx of thousands of ex-gold miners into the city, and it turned it from a backwater into a thriving international port.
Well, it's never stopped. San Francisco, California had all of the gold. Australia then got all of the gold. Lots of people came from there to here. Gold peters out. You head into the stretch of Sydney looking for jobs. It goes on probably for a bit longer, the gold rush down in Victoria. But you've got Irishmen everywhere, I imagine. Were there many living in Sydney in those days?
Yes, there were. There was a large group of Irishmen, and one of them was a man called John Edward Kelly. And John Edward Kelly had been a Fenian who was transported on the Hougoumont, had been here in Fremantle Prison, and had gone to Sydney to work. And we'll find out a little bit about his journey to Sydney, shall we?
Well, so he comes here, but he's not a military fit. He's able to leave after a period, goes to Sydney, where all the big smoke is. So what is his background?
Okay, so he came from Kinsale in County Cork, and as a child, he emigrated with his parents first to Canada and then to Boston. So he had some time in America, and he returned to Ireland in 1863 to join the Fenian movement. And he was one of the men involved in the Kilcluny Woods engagement. And I think you and I received some information about that site recently, Michael. And before his capture, he was transported on the Hougoumont. He was one of the best organisers in the Fenians, and he was also listed in the Wild Goose newspaper as their manager.
Very important person, the manager.
Indeed, the
News.
manager of a newspaper, indeed.
Now, was he a man of exemplary behaviour while he was here in Freo?
Well, he seems to have he did take part in the Guildford Mutiny.
What?
Now,
The Guildford
we hear
Mutiny.
the Guildford Mutiny happened when a group of so the Fenians were sent out in a group to Guildford to work in two different parties. One was under a man called Warder Howard. Now, Warder Howard was a particularly nasty warder, and he was given money by the authorities to purchase food and clothing and goods for the convicts, but he chose not to spend it on that. In fact, the story has it that he spent it on a prostitute. Now, the Fenians were outraged because they weren't being fed properly, but also that Warder Howard's wife took exception to this, understandably, and they sided with her. And so
How wonderful. They stood by the woman and recognized her honor.
Exactly.
What did they do?
They downed tools and they refused to work.
Oh,
So it
wow.
was really civil disobedience,
Good
but
Australian tradition,
of
downing
course,
tools and refusing to work. So what happened? Did they get
they
him?
were sent. They were taken off the party, the group of them, and returned to Fremantle Prison and put into prison on solitary confinement.
Oh, for goodness sake, I wonder what happened to the warder. Well, another story.
And wonder what happened to his poor wife.
Well, I'm thinking that too. She's probably lucky. She might have got a dissolution of her marriage. But what happens to Kelly? Somehow gets to Sydney, and what happens to him when he does?
Okay, he was granted a conditional pardon in 1871, and together with four others, he travelled on a ship called the Queen of the South from Albany to New Zealand. Now, they wanted to go to Sydney, but the boat was the pass only passage available was to New Zealand. So they arrived there in New Zealand and were told that they weren't allowed to land because they were convicts. Now, the same used to happen in Melbourne at the time. They didn't want to pollute the society with ex-convicts. So the ship's captain, of course, realised that he had people who would pay anything to get out of it and to get back to Sydney. So he charged them four times the fare to take them back to Sydney.
Well, I'm assuming it was well worth it. They get to Sydney. What happens? What does he
They
do?
did. So Kelly arrives in Sydney and he meets up with his old mate, John Flood. And John Flood is at this stage the editor of a newspaper there called The Irish Citizen. And so Kelly works with him and they continue to write this paper. But
Love
Kelly wants.
the serendipity of all of this. But do they forget their friends tucked away here in the establishment?
No. Kelly is absolutely dedicated to making up a plan for the release of the military Fenians here. And he wrote to O'Donovan Rosser in New York about the situation in Sydney. And he said he was actually criticised some of his countrymen and said that he criticised them for not daring to slight the Queen and for not for always toasting her health. And they wouldn't refrain from playing English anthems. So,
Oh, goodness sake, I love it. I also want to change my name, I think, to O'Donovan Rosser. I think that's one of the great names of history.
it's
So,
a fabulous name, isn't it?
but so what else does he have to say when he's ranting?
Okay, but he said that he was actually organizing Fenian support and support for the Irish cause amongst people in Sydney. And he said that the organisation has a comparatively powerful foothold in three goldfields in New South Wales, in New Zealand, and in Queensland. So we know that there are a lot of Irish people working there as miners.
Well, it sounds like the beginnings of the Australian Union movement, doesn't it?
I'm sure it was.
It was, and so in the course of that, you'd meet a lot of people. You'd presumably be able to recruit sort of more Fenian sympathisers.
Well, he came into contact with a man called John King. And King had escaped from Ireland as a free man at the time of the Fenian Rising. And he made his living in New South Wales selling groceries, foraging for gold, and working in a quarry. He remained committed to the Fenian cause and he organised actively to build support amongst the Irish community for to and raise funds for the release of the prisoners in Fremantle. So we had Kelly coming with the idea to do it. We had King already there with the idea to do it. And surprise, surprise, they meet up with both Breslin and Desmond. So this was all unbeknownst to Devoy and Breslin that
How
they.
advanced were Kelly and King's plans?
Well, interestingly, King had actually quite an advanced plan. They planned to charter a steamer and man it with their own crew, to travel to Fremantle,
My
to
goodness.
rescue the prisoners, and to take them to the French convict settlement in New Caledonia.
On the basis, presumably, of the French hated the English more than they did.
That's right, there was common ground.
Wow. So we've got a bit of a pincer movement here. We've got Kelly and King organising things. They're going to get their own boat and head over to Frio, pick them all up, and they know the land a bit because Kelly's been here. And then you've got Breslin and Desmond coming in under the auspices of the Irish in New York, Boston, and California. And they've got the Catawba coming down. I mean, this is going to be a big clash. What happens?
It's there. There's a, it's a lot is going on the high sea, isn't it?
Wow. But you'd have to
So,
discuss this over a few pints of ale.
well, I think
Guinness, I should add.
what would happen is that, I mean, Kelly really had he knew that Breslin was coming because encoded messages he'd got this information, but he had no idea what he was coming for. So when John Edward Kelly and Breslin sort of talked about it all, Kelly said, "Look, you have to meet King." So he takes them out. King was working in a quarry in Petersham, and he takes them out on a bus and a carriage, an omnibus, a horse-drawn carriage, to travel to Petersham. And then on the way, they spotted King coming in on a carriage in the opposite direction, and Kelly signaled for him to get down and come. And they sat under a shady tree, away from where anyone could listen to them, and Kelly introduced King to John Breslin. Now, Breslin, of course, is the heroic man who rescued the Fenian leader, James Stirling, from the Jublin jail. So,
That's something to remark upon, isn't it? That Breslin wasn't just your organiser; he'd also done the hard yards.
he'd already pulled off a very successful escape, yeah.
So they're
So
meeting the hero. They're sitting on the side of the road. King's got plans. Kelly's smart. He's been the manager of the Wild Goose. They're all at it. But what about Desmond?
Well, he was there at this stage, and they both talked to each other for a long time, and then obviously Breslin convinced King that their plan was well advanced, that the Catalpa was already on its way, and that really that what Kelly had to do was abandon, Kelly and King had to abandon their plan and fall in with De with Breslin and Desmond. So once hearing that and once understanding what how much work had been done to it, they agreed to do that. And Breslin said that he and Desmond were going to leave for Melbourne soon and then go on to Fremantle, where they would work out the finer details of how to get the Fenians out of the prison and onto the whaler. And he stressed the need for absolute secrecy, but he said how much he would appreciate any money that King might be able to collect.
So is that what then happens? That Breslin and Desmond go to Melbourne and come here, or what?
Yes, well, he sends Desmond on to Melbourne first by himself, and then they look for a ship to King George Sound, which is, of course, Albany. It was better at this stage for them to travel separately, just in case they were observed, and because they didn't want to raise any suspicion. So Breslin remained in Sydney, got a further £200 from King, who was able to get that from people. And they say that there was people gave the money without asking any questions.
Well, I think the Irish did that for a good 100 years or more around the world, and they all came in. I mean, the cause of the Fenians, the independence of Ireland was just so great by that time, wasn't it? So what's the arrangement with Breslin? When's he to turn up in Frio?
So King needed a bit more time to collect further money from Irishmen in the eastern colonies and also in New Zealand, and he knew that they would give it to him. So he suggested that Breslin follow on to, that he King should follow Breslin to Fremantle. So Breslin was to go to Melbourne and to get onto a boat, and King would follow in about 2 months' time with the rest of the money that Breslin could then use. So
So
Breslin.
it's really picked up. We've got in order of planned arrival, Desmond coming across. He's just a man below deck. We've got Breslin going to follow, coming to Fremantle via Albany, as we call it now, and then King, who's been roped into the deal and is able to raise money, he's following as well. So we're going to have three big Irishmen turning up in Fremantle before we know it.
That's right. But I think they must have all, both Desmond and Breslin, would have spoken with American accents so as not to raise any suspicion to their Irishness.
So Irishmen with American accents, they are emphasizing their Americanness.
Correct.
Do we know anything about when they actually got here? What about Breslin?
Okay, so we know that Desmond came on, and then Breslin arrived in Albany on the 13th of November, and he booked a passage on, wait for it, the Georgette.
Yes.
The
Well,
wonderful little steamer that was making, ploughing its way up and down the coast from Fremantle to Albany. And little did he know the significance that this very steamer would play in a further chapter of this story.
we better not give anything away. We just say Georgette, 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 and you're going to have to tune in to episode 7, listeners, to hear Margot O'Byrne develop this great narrative. Well, Margot, we need a good Bex and a lie down now after that excitement.
Or a drop of Guinness,
Or a
Michael.
drop of Guinness. Thanks for joining me today. I look forward to talking again soon.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael.